Bentornati tifosi napoletani to another edition of Noi Tifiamo Napoli. I'm your host, as always, Rafa Rispo. Once again, without Dan Russo, but Russo will be back Monday. We'll talk about the Inter match that's coming up this weekend. But we are here to wrap up coverage on Napoli's exit from the Champions League to Barcelona earlier this week. You all heard Michele and Henry back with... in the shadow of Vesuvio and their take on the situation. We have Ken, who recorded a video for our YouTube channel. Yes, that's right. Far From Vesuvius does have a YouTube channel. We've had it for quite a while. All the podcasts actually go to that YouTube channel, but you can go and if you would go and subscribe, like our videos, and help contribute in that way, that would be much appreciated. Lately, Ken has been posting some short videos to that, just some like Napoli thoughts and stuff like that. So I have his audio from that. I'd like to play it because it does kind of sum up the situation with Napoli and Barcelona. And he has a very interesting... response to a tweet from, a member of Napoli social media, and he goes a little deep in response to that tweet from a gentleman by the name of Stefan. I'm not going to try to say his last name. Ken will try to say it in the in the audio that you'll listen to. But also, we have a very special interview that I did with a friend of ours by the name of Payman Dadgar. He is also a very loyal listener, follower of Far From Vesuvius since the early days, actually since the early Sempre days. And he came in. I invited him in to talk about the future of Napoli. We do cover the game in a little more detail as well. So there's apologies if there's some, repeats in Ken's assessment and ours. But at the same time, it's really nice to hear from an outsider's perspective as well. And I applaud Payman for coming on because we normally have opposing views and such, and not drastically opposing, but, opposing nonetheless. And I like that he came in to speak his mind. I respect his take. And sometimes you just need to hear it from someone to kind of help change your mind. So, a healthy debate with Payman was very good to hear. And then I will be back to close the podcast up with just a little bit of an Inter Napoli preview and sort of kind of look at the European landscape in Serie A, and kind of see where we're at when it comes to what we have to do for the next 10 games, for the last 10 games of the season. So I hope you enjoy these two bits of audio, and I'll be back as soon as it's finished to close up the podcast. Enjoy, guys.
Yes, I know. My way.
Fosi, Ken here, Far From Vesuvius. Just wanted to pop in and give a little post-match recap slash some thoughts on the season. So far anyway, things, I think maybe some of our big goals for the season are now sort of off to the wayside and we have to reassess where we're at and what our goals are. And albeit disappointing, I think it's time for us to look at ourselves in the mirror and think about what our real goals are for the rest of the season. So first, I'll just give a little couple thoughts about the Barcelona match yesterday. Napoli lose 3-1 in the tie and 4-2 overall to Barcelona. Really, really bad first 20 minutes. Really, really bad 5-minute stretch where we give up 2 goals really easily. And then Napoli, I think, turned the game around a little bit. We control the game for long stretches. Maybe from like the 30th minute into like the 60th minute, a strong half hour. Rahmani gets one back and it's just a beautiful build-up goal. And you think, hey, you know, maybe we have a chance for this 2-2. Come out in the second half really strong, have a couple of big chances. I know one big scramble in the box at one point. A couple of saves by Ter Stegen. And then I think after the 60th minute, I think we just ran out of gas and we don't have many viable options on the bench. So I think Barcelona, when they got their fresher legs on, they were able to take control back of the match a little bit. And then the Lewandowski, you know, puts the dagger in our hearts, and that ends the Champions League dream for the season. So overall, I think it was pretty tough at points, but there was still promise. You know, some of the post-match comments were a little weird to me. Obviously disappointing if it's the truth. I think maybe it's just a little, I don't know. I get weird vibes from it that that's the truth, that they didn't understand how important the game was, or, you know, weren't mentally there. I think Calzona just said that he was upset with the way we started the game, but I think, unfortunately, that's part of the Napoli experience, and I don't really understand why it keeps happening or, you know, how true it is, but overall, probably what we deserved in the match. I know there were shouts for a penalty, and, you know, I think whenever you lose a game where we were so bad for so long and you look for opportunities to blame the referee, I think it's just a little petty. But aside from that, I wanted to maybe look at the bigger picture. And this is inspired by a post from Stefan Kutahar. I'm so sorry, bro. I tried. I messaged you and I was like, I was in the moment to do this video now, and you can correct me on Twitter or in the comments or wherever you'd like and be like, yo, bro, what you did to my last name is horrifying. So, Stefan, let me know. I'm sorry. But he made a really interesting post, and I will quote tweet it or retweet it and then put the link for this video underneath so everyone can see it. But he goes into length about this season and about sort of the delusion of what happened after Spalletti left and how De Laurentiis and crew have rebuilt the squad this season. And I think that there is definitely some merit to what Stefan is saying. And I wanted to just, you know, I think without a clear plan of what we wanted to do, we made some irresponsible and some signings that weren't a very good fit for our club, and we didn't really know where we were going to fit them, but we just thought, hey, Lozano is leaving, so I need to replace him with someone. And so that brings you to Lindstrom, who I think doesn't really have a proper place in this 4-3-3 that we play. I think he's more of like an attacking midfielder, someone who wants to start centrally and use his speed to break lines, and instead he's just sort of not really great out on the wing and hasn't shown much for us this season over 3 different coaches. So I agree with him on that. You know, we lose Kim and we don't properly replace him. We sign Nathan, who I think started decently well, but I don't really know what's been happening with him. He's been back from injury for a while now and hasn't really gotten back into the squad. You know, you keep an aging Juan Jesus and an inconsistent Amir Rahmani, which is part of it. And you bring in Jens Kajust, who is an interesting signing, but also someone who I don't really think fits the vision of the club. And then with Mazzari, you bring in Mazzocchi, who I think is great in a 3-5-2, and Stefan alludes to this, but I don't think he's someone you need can trust when you're trying to possess the ball and control the game that way. So I think we probably won't see very much of him for the rest of the season. And then in Gonj and Traore seem like 2 good signings, and then you have Dendonker, who just seems like a waste of a loan. Didn't make Champions League squad, and so it didn't really help us there because we were freezing out Zielinski. A lot of things to consider. And I agree with him with the fact that we need a clear strategy moving forward. And I think that's really the crux of this video is we need to find whether that manager is Calzona, which I think there's a fair possibility depending on how the rest of the season goes, or someone else. And I don't think we can get an aging manager or someone who's in here just to like give us a nice 2 or 3 year cycle. We need someone who has a vision of and a modern football vision, because that is clearly the way that De Laurentiis wants to play. Tried to force the 4-3-3 onto Mazzarri, and then now we brought in Calzona, who knows the system that we play. So I'm pretty sure that's the way he wants to set up his team. So you need to find a manager who will fit that and also fit the goals for the next few seasons. You know, looking back on it, not replacing Kim has been our biggest issue, and not properly getting depth in the midfield, which I think has actually been a bigger issue to us than the defense. Our gaps seem to be between the defense and the midfield line, and whether that's because we can't cycle in enough fresh legs or whether we can't play a high enough line because of the lack of pace in the defenders, I don't know. But both of those things need to be addressed this coming season. So I think I'll leave it at that. I didn't want to make a super long video, but I wanted to just sort of touch on Stefan's amazing post and give it some credit, because I think he brings a lot of clear and concise points without it being overly emotional or like it's very practical and pragmatic in its criticism and not just overarching things that we've seen in the past. So I want to give Stefan credit for that, and I wanted to just riff on it for a little bit. As always, folks, you can find us at Far From Vesuvius. You can find me at K_Cioffredi. That's K_Cioffredi. And I will keep doing these videos when I feel, you know, the need or when the time arises. And I want you guys to engage in stuff like Stefan's post, you know, sort of give me a little inspiration on something that I want to discuss. And, you know, I give you all credit for giving me that inspiration, but just something I wanted to just chat about and ultimately get your guys' opinions and thoughts on. So as always, y'all, my name is Ken from Far From Vesuvius, and Forza Napoli sempre. Yes, I know.
Okay, everybody, as I promised, I have a good friend of mine here with me to talk about the Barcelona loss. But more importantly and more in depth, I'd like to go into the state of Napoli with this gentleman. You know, we've seen that Ken put a YouTube video out. We've heard the audio that's attached to the first part of this podcast. And I think now what we're going to do is get another perspective from a guy that I respect and a guy that I've known for a while on, you know, social media outlets. And he's been a loyal listener and follower to Far From Vesuvius since day one. And I met him in Naples to celebrate the Scudetto. And that was a magical time. My good friend, Payman Dadgar, you grace us with your voice for the first time ever. How you doing, my man? What's going on?
I'm well. Thank you very much, Raf, to have me on your show. It's an honor to be here. I really respect your views. And as you said, we haven't always agreed eye to eye, but we have the same objective. Doing well, apart from Napoli, which has really kept me depressed the entire season. I was so looking forward to this season with the tricolore on our chest. And unfortunately, with 10 games left to the end of the season, we can't mathematically defend the title. We are out of the Coppa Italia. We are out of the Champions League. And it's going to be tricky to even qualify for the Champions League. So, yeah, it's not been the best title defense.
Yeah, it has not, Payman. And you know, I also respect you and I appreciate you coming on to share your views with us. I think healthy debate is great for any platform. And I think that you coming in here shows a lot of guts to, you know, kind of put your point out. And you know, it's no secret that I have my feelings toward, you know, a certain owner of the club and you have yours and, you know, directions we're going in and things like that. But I do thank you for coming in to talk about that. Before we do, let's quickly go over the Barcelona exit from the Champions League, the exit from the Champions League at the hands of Barcelona. 3-1 was the final. Napoli started the game in a pretty typical and pretty predictable lineup, 4-3-3. Met at the goalkeeper, Di Lorenzo out right, Rachmani and Juan Jesus in the middle, Mario Rui on the left, Traore, Lobotka, and Anguissa in the midfield, Politano and Kvaratskhelia on the flanks with Osimhen in the middle. Now, there are different ways we can look at this, Payman. I tend to, looking back, think maybe we should have started Olivera instead of Mario Rui. That would have helped defend Lamine Yamal. As we heard Alex from Total Barca, he was on the show before the game. He was actually on the show Monday that we posted the day of the match. He really was impressed with the way Olivera defended against Lamine Yamal. Lamine Yamal ran circles around Mario Rui. Mario Rui provides his offense, but we really could have used some defense early on. And just Juan Jesus, who's been almost pretty solid all season when it comes to, you know, what he's asked to do. But there are, you know, games and there are times where he shows his, you know, lack of, you know, defending skills, and this was one of them. Traore wasn't that great. It caused a lot of work that Anguissa and Lobotka had to make up for. And, you know, the usual stuff from Politano, aside from his assist. Osimhen was contained by this youngster, and Kvara was just trying to, you know, do his thing. And Medet had a pretty solid match, and I at the end of the day wasn't, you know, too upset with our performance, just the lack of finishing and in certain areas. So, Payman, how did you feel about the lineup, and how did you feel about the approach that we took for this one?
Thank you, Raf. I think in terms of the game itself, like you, I think we did pretty well. The first 20 minutes aside, and I come to the first 20 minutes, I think we had the right approach. We tried our passing game. You see clear improvements versus the games under Mazzarri. However, what you also see are clear limitations in the team, and I'll come to them shortly. With regards to lineup, I would have also rather seen Oliveira in first half and then yeah. Mario Rui in second half, where offense okay. is more important. Regarding the first 20 minutes and the lineup and the defense, from the fourth minute onwards, you saw multiple times that Barcelona was playing high balls over our defense, and they would every time catch Rachmani and Juan Jesus out of position. Yeah. That created multiple opportunities for Barcelona. So Yamal in the fourth minute, Fermín López multiple times in the 12th minute, and then in the 15th minute, the goal. So I think the lack of pace our defense has cost us. And you pointed to Juan Jesus. Yes, he's been solid, but he's been more solid under Mazzarri, where we play a deeper line. When right. you play with coaches such as Calzona, you need to play a higher line, and you need to try to keep the gap between attack and offense as short as possible. Otherwise, you leave a lot of space to the opposition. And playing with Juan Jesus, it's something you don't see because it's not necessarily mistakes. But that gap between attack and offense costs us. And every time Juan Jesus and Rachmani push forward, we are in trouble because it's literally high balls. That's what Barcelona did. And right. I believe It's not Karlsruhe's fault. I don't know what he could have done differently. I would have preferred Østergaard playing instead of Juan Jesus. But if we look at the first goal, that was more than anyone Di Lorenzo's fault. Twice he's been taken for a ride by Cancelo. Then Rahmani keeps Fermin Lopez onside. Politano doesn't track Rafinha. Jesus and Rahmani then look clueless, and Barcelona had two players, Lewandowski and Fermin Lopez, being completely unmarked. So I think if you look at the bigger picture, I agree. I listened to Ken as well before the show, and it's partially the midfield not tracking back, and it's partially a combination of Rahmani and Jesus just at this level not being good enough. I feel even Rahmani, it's less a lack of consistency. I think without having Koulibaly or Kim next to him, his limitations become more visible. And also not having Spalletti and playing a high line with a lot of possession, he's much more exposed. So in situations where he's taken on one-on-one, he just shows his limitations. And I'm not sure what Calzona could have done differently. The other point I want to mention is Traore. And when we speak about Traore and some saying he did well, if he looked like, I urge everyone to just watch the 7th to the 8th minute. 7th minute, Traore, simple pass to Kvara, gets intercepted. He loses the ball. We get under pressure. 8th minute, Traore loses the ball, creates a chance for Fermin Lopez. We have a goal kick. Traore gets the ball. It's still in the 8th minute. He loses it again. And when your midfield continues losing the ball repeatedly, your defense is under pressure as well. And a few minutes later, we concede the goal. So I think it's a combination of also technical quality that we lack in the team at this level to compete. So for me, Calzona, yes, he should have started Oliveira. Maybe he should have started Østergaard. But in midfield, what other options did we have? So I think it's to some degree also the quality of players we have this year.
Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go ahead and read off. We use FootMob as a tool for ratings and like information from each player. So I'm going to do that now. And I'll stop during key players and key, you know, moments and key actually information, especially with what you've just said, because I think everything you said kind of lines up with how we played and what shows here on FootMob. So Alex Medet received a 6.7 rating. He had 7 saves, so, you know, it's a lot to ask for him. You know, the 3 goals that were conceded, I wouldn't really put on his plate. So, you know, commendable performance from him, aside from, you know, obviously us losing. Di Lorenzo, a 6.1, really has no stats to show any sort of, or to even like, remark upon. In a rarity, a goal scorer gets a score lower than 7. Amir Rahmani, who got our goal, gets a 6.9 rating. FootMob likes to boost the ratings if you've done, you know, either a goal or an assist, no matter how you've played. But he ends up with a 6.9. It does say here that he completed the most passes in the match with 66. So there's a positive remark, but Juan Jesus with a really bad 5.6 rating, you know, again, being caught out of position by the speed of the offense, it just doesn't really, you know, he also got the yellow card. So that didn't help his matter here. Mario Rui with a 6.3, he was the most fouled player in the match with three fouls against him. Anguissa comes in with a 6.9 rating, nothing of note. Lobotka with a 6.3. He was the most accurate passer with 98% to play 45 minutes or more. He completed 39 of 40 passes. Ahmad Traore, a 6.2. He lost the most duels in the match with 9. And that also got a yellow card. That right there, to me, just kind of resonates with what you said and what our problem this season with what we've got going on. Now we can go into the reasoning after we finish wrapping up this match report, but let's keep in mind this Traoré rating, the fact that he lost 9 duels, and the fact that the midfield is where we pretty much lost this game. Politano and Kvara both share the highest rated scores for Napoli with 7.5 each. Politano getting the assist, which I thought was a great assist, but this guy just can't stop. Like he can't let go of the ball for some reason. He holds the ball way too long for me, and I really would have liked to see him go and get more minutes. I realize he's coming back from injury, but what are you going to do there? Kvara again with a 7.5, created the most chances in the match with 3 and completed the most dribbles in the match with 3. Osimhen a really dismal 5.9. One bit of information, he also lost 9 duels in the match, which is a shared low with Traore, but least touches of any outfield player to play 90 minutes is 29. This guy's not getting the ball enough, and he'll be out of here soon enough, but that's a problem. Could that be a problem for the next center forward that comes in or whatever? Oliveira off the bench with a 6.5 gets a yellow card, which really upset me, Payman. He comes in and 2 minutes after he comes in gets a yellow. But honestly, for a foul that to me didn't really deserve it, and the referee could have given him a warning. I hate when a player comes in and gets a yellow right away instead of like a warning, hey, don't do it again. It's late in the game. He did hit the post as well, so that was unfortunate. Lindstrom with a 5.7 really came in and did nothing aside from that narrow miss with the header late in the game that could have tied the game for us, which was very frustrating. Raspadori, in my opinion, was sent in too late, 6.0. I think it should have been him in the 64th instead of Lindstrom, but that's that's what are you going to do about that? And then Gonge comes on the pitch in the 90th for just to kind of get like some leg work. We knew we were done and dusted. I think he's getting him ready. Calzona's getting him ready to play for the rest of the season. And we don't make a fifth sub because, like you said, what other options do we really have? I mean, we had Cayuste on the bench that didn't really come in. We had Østergaard that didn't come in to like maybe help us solidify the defense a little bit. Mazzocchi, similar with the fact that we Juan Jesus defending with Calzona. I think Mazzocchi has a similar sort of role there where under Mazzadi it made a lot more sense, but under Calzona it doesn't make a lot of sense. Where's Natan? Why is he not playing? Simeone went from a wonder boy last season, a hero in some games, to non-existent this season, and it's just really sad. We were out of the Champions League payment. Those ratings are accurate. Anything from there that you want to like chime in on?
Just very briefly. I think one key takeaway for me was this reminded me a little of the Juventus game. Outcome aside, we pretty much controlled the game, but Barcelona had the far better chances. And to me, that's a function of our midfield not doing enough offensively to create chances and us being defensively too fragile. So, and every time Barcelona went forward, even if you look at the second half, even in this 40 minutes we controlled the game, it was good chance of Barcelona after good chance. We, to be honest, up until the 88th minute when we were chasing the goal, apart from the goal we scored, we only had 3 chances: the Di Lorenzo header, a speculative Kvara shot, and the Lindstrom header. That's up to the 88th minute, right? So we have problems creating, and we concede too easily games, even if we control games. That's one really important key takeaway. And then on the players, I think I urge everyone to watch the second goal. And yes, Lobotka was at fault for not catching the second ball that Mario Rui lost. But the second is 3 against 3. Rahmani, Jesus, and Di Lorenzo cannot defend man on man against Barcelona. And to me, that's a big problem. And on the other plays, I think Lobotka, for me, apart from the mistake on the second goal, had a great game. And everything else was really spot on. I agree with you, Politano is very selfish. And regarding Meret, the only thing I want to say, he had a decent game, but to me, the one thing he lacks is projecting confidence. And you need confidence when crosses come in. He never comes out to catch them. Often he
Yes.
doesn't catch the balls, and when he stops them,
Carries them away,
it
yeah.
bounces or
Yeah.
he concedes a corner. Even last year in the Champions League against Milan, he gives the ball away in a stretch of game that we dominated. Milan has a chance. He makes a great save, which leads to another corner, putting us under pressure, and everyone focuses on the save. No one focuses on him actually losing the ball and that leading to a Milan chance in the corner and changing momentum of the game. So I am not one of those who attacks Meret weekly, but I think we need to improve and goal and bring someone like Ospina, someone who just in key moment, or Reina. These are keepers that in key moments they come out, they catch the ball, they calm the game down. That's not what he's doing. But that aside, I agree to all the other ratings and rankings.
Well, we move on. We're out of the Champions League. But and I wanted to say this, not only does this mean that we do not, obviously can't win the Champions League. We're not going to win a trophy this season. I don't think anyone really here thought we'd actually win it. And I, at the end of the day, when, obviously we're upset that we're out at this stage, it would have been nice to make a second straight quarterfinal. And even if we were to be eliminated in the quarterfinal stage, which in my opinion, had we qualified for the quarterfinals, whoever we play, maybe aside from Dortmund, would have knocked us out. And I firmly believe that anybody would knock Barcelona out, maybe besides Bayern Munich. Or even Dortmund, just depending on, how they're looking for that. Like I think anybody aside from those two teams could actually eliminate Barcelona, could have also eliminated Napoli. So, being out of the Champions League does suck, but at the same time, I'm more upset that we don't qualify for the Club World Cup. And I've seen some reaction. Not from everybody, but some reaction on social media that, maybe kind of downplaying the Club World Cup. I don't know if they can grasp the importance of this newly reformed Club World Cup. It's no longer is it a one-off match tournament with the seven winners of the continental competitions in December, January for a week. It's now every 4 year competition, which FIFA is allocating a good amount of money to the people that are to the teams that are qualified. That they got this big presentation when someone qualifies, like when Napoli were eliminated and Juventus clinched their spot, and that's what really upsets me is that not Juventus goes at Napoli's expense, and it would have been a great, not only would it have been great to qualify for this competition, make a little more money, make a lot more money,
Lot more,
but
yeah.
also be there at Juve's expense. But you see, Gianni Infantino, president of FIFA, making this big like presentation that Juventus has now joined the Club World Cup and all this stuff. It's gearing up to be a pretty big deal in my opinion, Payman. They're still going to have this yearly, small competition every winter. And they're changing that to be called the Intercontinental Cup, which is now not the Club World Cup, but they're making this a proper thing. So yeah, it's in the summer, and yeah, people associate football in the summer as like glorified friendlies, but this is no glorified friendly. To participate in this World Cup would have been very massive, especially the inaugural one, especially for a team like Napoli, where the two representatives of Italian football, of calcio, going to America to play. And Americans here, the grand support that we have for this club could have seen some formidable and competitive football from Napoli in the United States. What are your feelings on that, on us missing
Yeah,
out on this tournament?
no, I think those who underestimate the importance of this tournament for Napoli do not understand the ramifications of not participating. Just to put this in perspective, Napoli's revenues without Champions League money are somewhere between 150 to 200 million. Qualifying for this tournament alone is worth somewhere between 50 to 100 million. That's how big this is. Napoli without Champions League makes less money than average Premier League teams. So it's Champions League qualification and Club World Cup that really help Napoli stay to some degree competitive. The second point is to be competitive and to increase your revenue. Apart from this, branding and stadium is important. We know how tricky stadium in Italy is, but this would have helped massively with branding in South America, in the US. I mean, the Neapolitan population in North America and in Argentina and Brazil is massive. And to lose out on this is really disappointing. So I think it's and look, there's a reason that for the first time ever, De Laurentiis offered 10 million to players if they qualified, right? So he, from a business point of view, he understands how important it is. And to be honest, in all of these years, I have never seen De Laurentiis as depressed as after the loss last night. And clearly, the disappointment wasn't for not qualifying to the quarterfinals. It was for missing out on the Club World Cup. He is now rumored to be challenging Juventus's participation in court. I doubt that's going to go anywhere, but again, it shows how important it is for the club and for the growth. So I think it's really sad. And all we needed is to win this game.
Yeah, it's really was a double blow in my opinion. You know, obviously, again, I said it, you know, before, and I'll say it again. We were never gonna win this Champions League. Let's be real, you know. But advancement was what we really needed, and it's something not only that we needed for money for the Club World Cup, but also for morale for the rest of the season. I'm not saying it's over because I don't believe by any means that it is over. There is still a chance that we qualify for the Champions League. I know it may be slim to a lot of people, but you know, I think Napoli can take this loss, which we suffered our first loss under Calzona, and not only our first loss, but the first time we gave up more than one goal in a match with Calzona. But I think now that this is out of the way and we don't have to worry about Champions League for the rest of the season, maybe we can, you know, lock in and refocus on the not only trying to make it to the Champions League, but also maybe even utilizing more of our acquisitions from the winter to maybe start gearing for next season, you know, and Gonge being back healthy, maybe we need him to come in and feature a lot more. We've got to figure out a midfield, something for the midfield with what we have. You know, I in my opinion, I think Traore might be a little out of position where he play, where he's has to play. But you know, the omission of Zielinski in the Champions League might have hurt us too. But at the same time, he has not been the same since the Scudetto and all the rumors about Inter and all that stuff. We just don't have we don't have anything else to deal with you know, from now to the to 10 matches remain, big games coming up. How do you see Napoli finishing the season, payment within regards to thinking of the fact that fifth place is still very much a Champions League spot as of now for Italian football. A lot of people out there associate Inter's exit because they exited the Champions League yesterday in dramatic and, you know, unbelievable fashion. Because of Inter's exit, they're saying goodbye to the fifth spot, which is definitely not the case. Italy are still in a very 94% chance of finishing top two in the coefficients and gaining that fifth spot. How do you feel about the rest of the season going forward?
Yeah, I think first of all, regarding fifth spot, I was really disappointed with Inter losing yesterday. I think they threw it away. It would have really helped us. All I'm hoping for now is for Germany's team to do badly because the Premier League teams are going to win and gain points. And just looking now at the scores, Milan is 3-0 up in Prague and West Ham is beating Freiburg. So I'm cautiously optimistic about fifth spots still being available. Unfortunately, I will have to root for teams like Milan, Roma, and Fiorentina, who I do not like.
They got us, Payman. They got us, man.
That's something I blame De Laurentiis for, and it hurts to have to do that, even for Inter. But no, I fully agree with you. So I think it's a balancing act. We need to test our players, but we need to make sure we're playing for that fifth spot. And I think that's where Calzona now needs to be less dogmatic. He reminds me a little of Sarri. He has a core 11, and irrespective of performance, he doesn't move away from them. And I think in defense, we need to try Ostergaard and Nathan and see, are these players we want to bet on next season, or do we need two defenders rather than one? I think that's really important. On Traore, again, we need to see if it's worth investing in him. I have my doubts because if I look at Dendonka and Traore, Dendonka played 8 games as a sub for Aston Villa this year, Traore 3. I agree, Traore had injuries, but even last season, he only played 11 games for Bournemouth. So I have my doubts. I was initially very disappointed with Zielinski being left out of the Champions League, but as you said, his performances have been horrific. So he's clearly mentally not there. But like you say, we need to focus on finishing top five, and we need to test players for next season. What worries me, Raf, and what worries me the most, though, I see a lack of strategy. And I see that in the transfer strategy, in our salaries, renewals. And I give you a few examples. De Laurentiis has made it clear that his priority for hiring a coach is playing a 4-3-3. Even last year, our most expensive acquisition and the only acquisition I opposed was Raspadori, even though I rate him. We spent 35 million on a player that is not suited for a 4-3-3. He's a highly talented player. I highly rate him, but he's not suited for a 4-3-3.
I was going to
This
ask
year.
you about that because I know we had our exchange on Twitter, and that's one of the things I wanted to bring up. So I can see that. I can see, obviously he came in and has provided some very good memories from some key moments, the goals against Juventus, the Champions League goals last season, things like that. He comes in and does provide, but I now understand what you're saying. Like in the long term, he doesn't suit the system.
Because remember, Raf, he's the, I think after Osimhen, Lozano, and Higuain, he's the fourth most expensive player in Napoli's history. So we need to, and he's highly talented. I feel bad for him as well. Of course he has talent. Of course he's going to add. But when Napoli spent 60 million on Lindstrom and Raspadori, you don't want those two to be third subs in a game, right? They need to be starters. It's the same as Lindstrom. Lindstrom is not a 4-3-3 player. And it's the same with Traore. Again, Traore is not your classic midfielder. So what are we doing? That's my first question and my biggest worry. What are we doing with regards to transfers? Secondly, De Laurentiis said he wants to focus on youth. I tell you the last players whose contracts we renewed. Rahmani, over 30. Jesus, over 30. Mario Rui, over 30. Politano, over 30. So how is that in line with focusing on youth? And none of them are players we want to invest our future in. And then more importantly,
Do you think, I'm sorry, do you think maybe he's looking to offload some of those players? Do you think
it's
maybe
the
go ahead.
it's hard to see for players above 30 that aren't superstars when you give them long-term contracts. What other club, especially top clubs, are not going to buy these guys? Which mid-level club is going to come and offer better salaries? Who where is Politano, and this is the next point I want to make. Politano is now the second or third highest earner at Napoli. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Or I'll give you another example, right? I fully agree with De Laurentiis renewing Osimhen's contract, but he mismanaged the situation in such a way that he had to give Osimhen a really good contract last minute. But now Osimhen is earning 9 times more than Kvaratskhelia. Demir, who's not even in the squad, is earning double of Kvara. You can't. And there are a lot of examples like that in the squad. And
yeah,
the reason this is happening repeatedly is we need two things. We need a sports director and we need a general manager. These are two separate functions. We need both. We don't have either. De Laurentiis is doing all of it. This is a key reason Thiago Motta refused Napoli. He asked De Laurentiis, who would be the sports director? And De Laurentiis responded, what's wrong with me? And Raf, the reason I get attacked, right? There's two reasons I'm a little negative or less positive about the future. One is, where is the strategy? And I get it. People say he's learned from the future. To me, if you've learned from the future, now is the time to hire a sports director. We can't revamp the whole squad in summer if we don't now have a... We first need a sports director. The sports director needs to create a project, bring a coach, and then we need to get all these players. This needs to happen early in the transfer window. So yeah, the players train as well. This is... I want to remind everyone of another point. We've only done this once when Benitez came, because 2 years ago was not really rebuilding the squad. Yes, we got rid of the Senators, but only two players in the first team changed. Insigne was replaced by Kvara and Koulibaly by Kim. The rest was actually the same team as the previous year, because even Mertens wasn't a starter and Fabian and Zielinski were competing for the same spot.
Right.
This year is completely different. To do an overhaul and not yet have a sports director is very worrying to me. That's one point. The second point, and this is my biggest criticism, unlike many others, and I hate when people always, if someone criticizes De Laurentiis, we always bucket everyone into the same bucket. My biggest criticism is completely different to most others. My biggest criticism is Serie A is falling behind. And what De Laurentiis is doing wrongly, in my view, a lot of Italian clubs are doing wrongly. But the way around it is to invest in infrastructure. You need to invest in a youth academy. You need to invest in training facilities. You need to at least have plans to build a stadium. I know it's difficult in Italy, but we don't even have renders of a new stadium. And when you don't invest in facilities, yes, you don't see the difference short term. The same happened to Serie A in the early 2000s when Milan won a few Champions League, Inter won one. But that was the time the English clubs, German clubs, Spanish clubs were investing. And everyone in Italy felt comfortable that we are the best league. And suddenly we woke up and we were far behind. And what I've been warning since 2015-16 with Napoli is, yes, short term, you don't see it. But in a few years, we are somewhere where the 20th team in the Premier League is earning much more than us. How do we compete with them? How do we compete for players? And on top, we don't have a youth academy to bring someone up from the youth system. So that it's these two points, Raf, that long term, I'm very pessimistic. And I am not one of those who says De Laurentiis out at any cost. By no means. There are far worse owners. I mean, even Lotito at Lazio, who is prudent, is far worse than De Laurentiis. Don't get me wrong on that. But my criticism stems more from the fact that we're going to wake up one day and suddenly realize how far we are behind. I mean, if you watch Napoli games or Serie A games, and then you watch a game yesterday, I don't know if you watched the Atletico Madrid Inter game, you see the stadiums, you see the facilities. It just looks like a modern age, and yeah, we're not going to build our brand. And that is my biggest criticism.
Okay. He does have... I can't say he has a plan, but he's been talking about new facilities. He's been talking about a new stadium. He wants to build one in Bagnoli. Henry and Michaela next week are going to touch a lot more on that. They're putting out a short reaction to Barcelona And then next week is going to be the plans for a new stadium and new infrastructure special. But I mean, listen, hearing it from your voice instead of reading it on Twitter or like, you know, follow your tweets followed by an array of, you know, ADL's a cancer. He set us back 5 to 10 years. He this and that.
I've never said that, right?
No. I know that wasn't you. I know that wasn't you. It was a few others, and they know who they are. Whether they're listening or not, that's fine. But everything you say makes a lot of sense, Payman. It does. It really does. It's educated and well thought out, and the I guess the only rebuttal I may have to most of it is that ADL will find a way to make things happen. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me that as we speak right now, he's locking in a new director of sport. I think it would be a fantastic idea to have Marek Hamsik involved in anything we do. I think Calzona, if we hear that Calzona is going to be the guy to lead us in from after the Euro on, I would be great with it because I honestly think that Calzona would be able to take care of things. And it's a name that no one's thought of. You know, also Calzona and ADL seem to get along. Otherwise, Calzona would never have decided to come back and take care of things here. So it's one thing less he has to worry about. But in the past, I just feel like when Napoli have had a season, a down season, I can't say a season like this because we've not had a season like this in a long, long time. But when we've had a down season from the previous season or when we've missed the Champions League, you know, everybody thought that the sky was falling when we missed the Champions League. And I went on record saying we can miss one, we can maybe miss two, but we can't miss three. So what happened? We missed two and then we won the Scudetto. You know, it just to me, it feels like everything that you said is valid. But at the same time, I have full faith in De Laurentiis fixing the problem for the short term when it comes to the team. And the only thing is that he's got to make do on his promises to fix the long-term issue with the youth, the facilities for practice and training, and a new stadium has to be somewhere down the line here. It has to
be. Raf, I fully agree with you. I think I've said that online as well. I'm less worried about the short term. I think there are ways to get back. We have a lot of money. We have more money than the other 19 Serie A teams combined in cash. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we are financially in a very good position. Inter has 900 million of debt, right? So I'm less worried about the short term. Short term, my only worry is him finding the sports director like you. I'm hoping that the rumors about Massara or others are true and he's genuinely doing that. If he's doing that now, we will come back and I'm sure we will come back stronger. My worry is more longer to medium term because I love this club like you and we just need to make sure we stay sustainable and we can compete. Yeah. I think the other criticism of ADL sometimes, and it's hard to quantify it, but I think what a lot of people rightly or wrongly believe is that he spends usually when Champions League is in doubt. So for example, in the summer of 2015-16 with Sarri, we were top of the table. We had no bench other than Mertens. I mean, our midfielder was David Lopez, right? He did not invest. 17-18 with Sarri, we're top of the table. He could have invested. He didn't. We lost Goulam and we were 4 points ahead of Juventus in the winter. He didn't replace him. We lost the title. Last year, we won the league. With a bit of investment, he could have solidified it. He didn't. But in the winter of 2020, when Champions League was in doubt, he spent 21 million on Lobotka, 12 million on Demet, 23 million on Politano. And I think the reason a lot of fans were happy until 2015-16, and from that point onwards, there has been so much disagreement with De Laurentiis. Up to 2015-16, everyone's dream was to get to Champions League. So the expectations of the fans and De Laurentiis were aligned. And I think from 15-16, when you win, you want more. And I'm not necessarily blaming De Laurentiis. Napoli, other than under Ferlaino, who ultimately ruined the club. But other than those 7-8 years, Napoli has never been able to compete with the Northern clubs. Mm-hmm. That's why I actually am a big advocate in investing in infrastructure to long-term be able to compete. But I think so I'm not necessarily even blaming De Laurentiis for wanting to be top four and trying to win occasionally. Because if you're sustainably top four, and by the way, Lotito does the same with Lazio, but just at a lower level, he tries to be consistently in Europe and the odd year go into Champions League. Mm-hmm. And he's done that. And De Laurentiis tries to be top four and occasionally win the league. I'm happy with that. The problem is every time we struggle, De Laurentiis raises expectations to distract from the problems. And when you raise expectation, people want more. And then to not deliver, it causes discontent because everyone believes we can do that. He even did it this winter, right?
Yeah.
He talked about this massive market. We all agree it's hard to get players in winter. But when De Laurentiis says, oh, we're going to address everything in winter, you think he had 3-4 players lined up and then he doesn't deliver. So yes, he distracts for a month, but then creates 6 months of discontent.
When you hear it, it makes a lot of sense. It's hard to argue it. It really is. It is. He spent money in the winter, but on, like you said, on what? None of those guys are replacing anybody in the starting 11. I'm with you there. I am, the ability to create the next superstar and sell them off. I mean, I think that's one thing that we have that's in our favor. When it comes to missing out, like potentially missing out on the Champions League, especially this season, if we don't finish top five, we're still selling Osimhen and we're going to make 120 to 135 million euro, which is essentially almost or right at double Champions League money. We also have Kvaratskhelia his agent threatened to leave if we don't make the Champions League as well. And he'll go for a large sum as well. So I'm, you know, like you said, short term, I think we'll be fine. I think the fact that we have both Kvara and Osimhen that we can, you know, look to the future with the money, I think that eases my worry about long term just a little bit more. And in my opinion, there's no doubt that he'll take that money and invest where we need to be, as far as competing goes, because we've been competing for, you know, a decade and a half now, maybe even longer than that. But your points on the future are very valid. I think it is very important that we start paying attention to youth. You know, you look at Barcelona. They have injuries. They bring in these youth guys, and they run circles around guys like Mariri and Osimhen. And it's
incredible.
It's something that needs to be done and looked at. And a lot of that also is down to the Naples, the authority in the city of Napoli and all that. But if we can get that done, you know, we'd be in a lot better shape. What would be, obviously, fifth place is a must now at this point, whether or not it's a Champions League spot or not. I think it will be. But in my opinion, to finish as high as we possibly can in this table needs to happen for us to be anywhere in a conversation next season. And If you were to look inside of a crystal ball and say ADL makes all the moves he's supposed to make to be able to compete next season, what is content? Like, do we need to win another trophy to make you happy, to make fans happy? Do we need to finish top four? Like, is it another slow and steady build? Because in my opinion, a lot of the – again, I – there's people out there that say, you know, when am I personally, me, Raf, ever going to admit that ADL fucked up this season? And I already have done that. Like, I've done that. They want me to say ADL's out. He's a cancer. He's bad for the club. He's finished. He hit a ceiling, blah, blah, blah. I can't say those things because when we said he hit the ceiling, he busted through the ceiling. When they say he's finished, he comes through. So historically he comes through. So I will never say those things. I will admit he messed up the season, and everybody knows the reasons why. So I'm not going to rehash it, but we won the Scudetto last season, so people want more of that. Instead of thinking, oh, there's other teams that are very competitive as well that are capable of winning the Scudetto, and we beat the crap out of all of those last season, and now Inter is the one, you know, in the position that we were in last season. Do we need to win another Scudetto to make everybody happy again? Everybody wants a Scudetto. I want a Scudetto every season. I want to win every year. I want to go to this Club World Cup and like make it to the semifinal of it. Like, don't get me wrong, but in my opinion, I'm content if I just see some improvement on this season for next year. Where do we need to be next season for you? And then we'll get out of here.
Yeah. So, look, I fully agree with you. I want to win the league every year. I really think we had the opportunity to build a cycle, and I think that's what disappoints everyone. We had a young squad. We needed to add 3-4 elements. In my view, I said it in summer as well, we should have replaced Kim with 2 defenders. We should have brought in a midfielder and a winger, and we would have been, in my view, with a good coach, unstoppable. This year, to be honest, I don't believe we're going to finish top 5. So I've come to terms with it. So I'm not going to even see that as the end of the world. What I want to see for next year is A, Napoli qualifying for Champions League. We need to do that next year. I think it's unacceptable not to. But more importantly, if he gives us a very young squad with potential, something to hope for the future, I'm going to be happy with that. What I don't like is scrapping and fighting for top 4 with 30 plus old average players like Politano, Jesus, Mario Rui, and Rahmani. That's what I don't want to see. If we had a squad of 23, 4-year-old young kids trying to get into Europe, I prefer that. That's the first point. And the second point is I care more about the sustainability of the club long term. If he starts investing, youth facility, at the training center, he has to do. We're basically being kicked out of Castel Volturno.
Right.
So we need to leave that place. But if he starts investing in a youth facility, if he actually works with people towards a stadium plan, because I don't believe anything he said so far. He's done that in the past. And but Raf Marino, who was our sports director, said there was never a plan. He always makes these stuff up, and right now there are not even renders. But if he actually starts just presenting a plan, I appreciate how difficult it is in Italy. And if he starts investing in youth, and if he builds a top training center and starts bringing, rather than his daughter and his son-in-law and his family members, if he brings professional people, you know what Manchester United did in the early 2000s? They hired 6 people from private equity firms and marketing firms, set up an office in London and worked on branding. We need to do something like that. You don't build a brand overnight. There's so much potential in South America and North America and Asia. We're keeping everything untapped. And if he starts doing that, I care more about that than short-term victories. I'm happy to be for 5-6 years, even outside of Champions League, if I know we do something that long-term helps us.
Mm-hmm.
So get if he gets next year young players, we compete for top 4, and if he invests a little in youth, I'm going to be happy. But I need to see him bringing a good sports director and at least trying and presenting a project. Yeah. That's what I care about more than anything, to be honest. But there are are fans that have unrealistic expectations. I'm not one of those. Of course I want to win. Of course I'm upset if we don't compete for the title. Even next year I want to win the title. But deep in my heart, I'm realistic about how likely it is.
And I've said it, Napoli have no right to be upset about not winning Scudetto, about not competing and this and that. Just looking at the track record of winners in Serie A, the top three have won since every year since 2001. Even then, it was only a couple of seasons where the top three didn't finish, and they always win. And Napoli really has like no business around the top of the league. And I think my words were taken completely out of context. I think Napoli fans deserve it because I think every fan deserves it in every city. You bleed for a club. You as a fan, you want these things and you wish for these things and you dream of these things. And we're getting to do that now. But like the expectation fans have of Napoli right now making this dynasty without the things that you've pointed out is a lot of is a lot of dreams that are not being like made come true, and they're taking it out on ADL and how he runs a club. You know what I mean? And
Raf, can I
there's
add
even,
one?
yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, can I add one point to what you're saying? So I'm not even saying ADL is worse than other Italian manage or presidents, right? My point is because they're all bad, that's why Serie A is in such a state. We actually have an opportunity to break into that top tier. We can consistently compete, but to do that, we have the money. We need to invest in infrastructure now because we have the opportunities. Because it's partially, not partially, it's actually down to De Laurentiis building such a financially sustainable club. But now is the time where we are financially sustainable, where we have a lot of money to use some of that money to do things that other clubs, because they have been mismanaged, haven't done. So my frustration doesn't come from the fact that De Laurentiis is the worst manager, but he's brought us to a point where he can now take the extra step. And what I fear is, does he's like in his 70s, does he really have the intention to do that or not? That's what worries me. That's what I'm criticizing. I'm not necessarily saying any other owner is better. Yes, a Qatari sheikh would obviously invest. Bezos would invest more. But realistically, normal owners won't invest more. And my criticism comes more from the fact that now that we're this close, let's do the right thing. I'm not advocating, I never have, buy players for 100 million, 80 million just to win
Yeah,
short term,
can't do that.
because that we don't have the means. But what we need to do is we need to do something to build the means. And the criticism I have of De Laurentiis is he's done well so far, but his strategy has always been on being tight on costs. And you run a business as well. To be tight on costs, you can increase your margin only so much because you can't go further down. So at
Right.
some point, you need to increase revenue. And the one thing I'm not seeing is what are we doing to increase revenue other than saying we want to qualify for the Club World Cup? Those things we know in sports are hit and miss. So you need to do other stuff. And that's my main criticism of De Laurentiis.
Okay.
Do it now. Okay.
I love it. I love it. Thank you very much for coming on and explaining, your view, and I'm with it now. Like I see what you're saying and I'm all for it. I am. I have the ability to recognize what he's done for this club long term up until now. And I also have the ability to see what he needs to do in the future. And if he doesn't, then it could go belly up at some point. And you've helped me realize that, and I appreciate that payment a lot. I really do. But let's not make everything ADL's fault, right, guys? Like, I
No, I
mean,
agree.
like you see things like Politano misses, a pass, or Lindstrom misses a header. Oh, ADL did that, Juan Jesus gave up, missed his spot on a defensive move, and Meret didn't catch the ball, and it got past him. That's ADL's fault too. That's
Raf,
incredible. It's
yeah, Raf,
incredible.
let me give you another example. I mean, I was almost at all the last games last season in the stadium. I had a
Right.
season ticket this year, and all I can tell you is the way Napoli celebrates a Scudetto and the way the players are put on a pedestal, it gets to their heads as well. So
Sure.
that has nothing to do with ADL, right? That's the environment in Naples. And there's a reason that even in 1990, after winning the Scudetto, we were doing badly because the way we celebrate, And it is unreal. And look, for me, I've waited since 1990, and winning the Scudetto, like that Udinese game, I just had tears and couldn't even speak. I was so happy. But the way we celebrate, it's great, but it also is different to other clubs. We celebrated the whole summer while other teams were preparing. That's not because of ADL. That's a mentality shift that needs to happen. So I agree, we can't just make it about the president and not see the other faults of the club or of players, of fans, of everyone else. The other last point I want to make, the ultras, right? I love the ultras. I sit in or stand in Curva B when I go there, but they criticized De Laurentiis until he struck the deal with them. And since then, since De Laurentiis has made his biggest mistakes, the ones that are silent about it are actually the ultras because they have their interests being satisfied. So I think just always blaming one individual or one entity is to me anyway not the solution, right? There are many issues why Napoli is not like Inter Milan and Juventus. It's also the economic situation, right? People expect lower ticket prices, and I understand why, but how can we compete with them when we sell less merchandise, when everyone buys not the when buys fake
Fake stuff,
shirts,
right.
right? So De Laurentiis has to every 3 months create new shirts so that those who can afford it buy more shirts, so he makes some money for the club. But even that's ridiculed by people, right? So I think people also need to understand with what he's had up for me, at least up until 2017, 18. Actually, for me, up until 2016, he's done phenomenally well. The other point I want to say also, and I've criticized him a lot, he's the guy who hired Sarri and Spalletti. I actually supported both, but most people were against both coaches.
Right.
And those were
Absolutely.
those who put
Absolutely.
Napoli on the map, right? Many people said that's ridiculous.
Right. I'm one of them.
So
Yes,
I
absolutely.
actually supported both. I was a big Ancelotti opponent, but I supported both Sarri and Spalletti. But the point being, that's not something many presidents at that level would have done.
Yeah, true. Very true. Very true, payment. All right, my man, thank you so much for coming in. I
Perfect.
really appreciated this. I want to have you on again for sure. We'll talk maybe after the season or when we know what we've done. It was good to see your face again, man. And
Yeah, good to
hopefully we
see you
can
as
meet
well.
up
And I
again in
hope to see you
Naples.
in New York or in Naples. Yeah.
Oh yeah, when are you coming to New York? When are you
I may
thinking?
come. I'm hoping to come for work in the next few months, but let's see. It
You
depends.
keep me posted and I'll make the trip
Absolutely.
down to the city for
Absolutely.
sure. All right,
All right.
Payman, take
Yeah,
care, my
perfect.
man.
Thank
I
you, Raf.
appreciate you. Ciao,
Cheers. Have
ciao.
a lovely day.
Bye. You too. You too.
Okay, guys, that was Payman Dadgar, and what a sweetheart he is. And he, you know, brings up a lot of great points, opens a couple of eyes, in my opinion, on some things that need to be addressed by Aurelio De Laurentiis and company. And it's always good to have another perspective in here to kind of like show you what does need to be done, what's important. But at the same time, you know, with this whole exit from the Champions League and Napoli not making it to the Club World Cup, losing out on money, losing out to Juventus, there's a lot more concern to be looked at. And some of it has to do with the lack of teams left in Europe for the Champions League. Now, I know all four teams are out of the Champions League, and there was a lot of concern about fifth place and that affecting fifth place. But let's not forget that it's actually really three teams that are out of Europe, not four, as Milan went into the Europa League. So while Italy not having all four teams in the Champions League, it doesn't necessarily translate to Italy losing out on that fifth spot. The fact that Italy still have four teams in the other competitions, you know, Milan, Roma, Atalanta in the Europa League, and then Fiorentina in the Conference League. I know Those are lesser leagues, but they count the same when it comes to the rankings and how it works out. So basically, the way this works is there's 2 points for a win, there's 1 point for a draw, and an advancement gets an extra point. So a team has the ability to gain 5 coefficient points, not only for their club records, but also for the coefficients for the nation. And the draw was earlier today. Today is Friday, the 15th. And earlier today, Milan has drawn Roma in the quarterfinal. Atalanta drew Liverpool. That was kind of an unfortunate occasion. And Fiorentina in the Conference League got Victoria Pleasant. So, you know, a favorable draw in the Conference League, followed by a not so favorable draw in the Europa League with Atalanta and Liverpool. And then some also might say, great, we lose a team in the quarterfinal and by you know, having Roma and Milan draw each other. But at the same time, we gain a team to the semifinal. And what that does is it guarantees 5 coefficient points to Italy, because, you know, losing games don't get you negative points. They just get you 0 points. So when we look at Milan and Roma, whether it's Milan or Roma qualifying for the next round, it guarantees Italy 5 points in this way. Let's say Milan win the first leg and then Roma win the second leg, right? That's 2 points each for Italian teams. So that would be 4 points. And then one of the teams are going through, so that would get the extra point, the for the fifth point. Let's say Milan draw the first leg, Roma draw the second leg, and that sends the teams to extra time. There's 2 points there from each game for each team. So that's as if a team won the first leg. So regardless of the outcomes at all, either way, Italy get 5 points. And that's great because of us neutral Napoli fans, we don't really have to cheer for Roma or Milan. It doesn't matter who goes, Italy get those 5 points. What we want is Atalanta to beat Liverpool. What we want is Fiorentina to progress as far as they can as well. Fiorentina only really have to worry about Aston Villa in the Conference League. There are no other real threatening teams in that competition. But this Europa League is pretty stacked. Those two games, obviously. And then on the other side of the bracket, well, not really on the other side of the bracket, because I think the way it was that Milan or Roma would play against the winner of West Ham and Leverkusen. That would mean that Liverpool and Atalanta's winner would play against Benfica or Marseille. And that's a very interesting Europa League quarterfinal. Just to cover the Conference League, it is Fiorentina and Pleasant will play the winner of Bruges or PAOK, and then Aston Villa and Lille will play the winner of Olympiacos and Fenerbahce. So again, a big possibility for, you know, Fiorentina to gain 5 more points against Victoria Pleasant. You know, they have a 70% chance of qualifying to the semifinal. The Europa League situation is Milan have 62%, Roma 38%, and the only really tough one is Atalanta with a 26% chance over Liverpool. But we're guaranteed to secure a semifinal spot. Great for the coefficients and the race for the additional Champions League spots, like I mentioned. So to secure the extra spot, Italy, with a guaranteed 0.71 points for AC Milan or Roma included would put them at 18.428. So that total has been automatically added because it's guaranteed in the Milan and Roma tie. So that puts us 2.072 points ahead of Germany and 2.178 points against ahead of England, who have the third spot. So we would need to completely capitulate for us to miss out on this. It's a 97% chance now at this point that we'll get the extra Champions League spot. So what does Napoli have to do? Napoli have to finish in fifth place. 10 more games left coming. And Inter this weekend. And it's not going to be easy, because breaking news is that Osimhen is a doubt for Inter. He's got a muscle strain that he came up with. And now it looks like he's been doing personal workouts and is a very big question for the game against Inter. So that is not good for Napoli at all. Today began the 29th round of Serie A, and Empoli and Bologna were at a 0-0 until Bologna hit a goal in the 94th minute and win the game 1-0 and basically solidify fourth place. They now have 54 points on a game in hand. Roma 48, Atalanta 47, Napoli 44. Let's not forget that Fiorentina and Atalanta play against each other this week. But yeah, we'll have a lot of work to do this weekend. I got to tell you, it's the more and more things come out, it doesn't look very good. It actually looks kind of bleak. But, you know, and I'm not one to be a pessimist on this show. I'm one to always sort of, you know, see the light in situations and kind of rally the squad. But I'm not looking forward to a birthday gift from Napoli for any kind of win against Inter. But listen, let's just keep going. You know, what's done is done. We've got to move forward and look to the future. We'll be back, like I said, Monday night. We'll record Dan, myself. We'll wrap up the Inter result and go over the rest of the results in Serie A. Until next time, ciao ciao for now. Forza Napoli, sempre. Stai da fronte!